I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, medical bills, or personal loans, help is here. More and more Americans turn to credit cards to get by. National Debt Relief is helping qualified clients reduce what they owe. For many, continuing to struggle making minimum monthly payments could take years to pay off. National Debt Relief has already helped over 550,000 Americans reduce their debt by negotiating directly with their creditors. When you call, you'll be amazed at how much you can save and how quickly you can become debt-free. If you want off the debt treadmill, visit nationaldebtrelief.com today. You don't need to declare bankruptcy, and you may qualify for significant debt relief. To find out what savings you may qualify for, simply visit nationaldebtrelief.com. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. From roof repair to emergency plumbing and more, done well. So the next time you have a home project, leave it to the pros. Get started at Angie.com.
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend and even hire employees. My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of The Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We import snacks from all over the world. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day. Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
We love those guys, and we ask you, what are you doing to protect your family's assets? As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condor and Morag can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com, and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
On the Rude Guest Hotline, we find our guy Jay Gruden, former head coach in D.C. Jay Gruden joins us every Monday after game.
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Tedbert Automotive Group, Tedbert Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Tedbert Lincoln and Chantilly, and Tedbert Chevrolet in Sterling, all home to Tedbert for life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at Tedbert.com.
Jay, what's up? How you been?
Been good. How you guys doing? I'm down here in Daytona, Florida, coaching the Hula Bowl this week.
Oh, very
cool. Nice, man.
Well, we'll ask you about that in a minute. I'm curious about that. That's pretty sweet. I want to start with a couple of notable items on the Commanders. There was a report over the weekend that Cliff Kingsbury and Adam Peters have been butting heads behind the scenes, and there could be some tough conversations coming, and that Kingsbury may not come back for year three, the final year of his deal, even if he doesn't get a head coaching job. What do you make of that?
Well, that's odd to me because typically the GM and the offensive coordinator don't have contact at all. That's the head coach's job to talk to the GM directly and relay the coach's message to him directly, and the coaches don't have really any, interaction with the GM. So it's odd to me. But, I guess if he's not getting the players he wanted, and maybe he's expressed his frustration in that way. But it's just a weird situation because, like I said, they don't really typically interact.
What would be more likely a reason for them to not be on the same page? Would it be that he's going to him and Quinn, maybe collectively, and asking for schematic changes? Like, hey, we're under center less than everybody else. We're in the no huddle more than everybody else by far. Or could it be, hey, I want my guys on the field. You're not using, I'm just making this up, but like, I need more looks for Sinnott. I need more Luke McCaffrey ops. Like, which one would you think is more what a GM and a coordinator would be at odds about?
Probably that. Mainly the use of Jaden Daniels probably early on, maybe not running them as much or getting them and putting them in harm's way as often as he has. That could be an issue personnel-wise. Typically, the GM doesn't come down and say, I want the quarterback under center. I want this. I want that from a schematic standpoint. Typically, it's from a player standpoint. Hey, you're not using this guy enough in the passing game. You're not using this tight end enough. Maybe not using Ben Sinnott. Maybe whatever it might be. It just seems weird that typically that Peters goes to Quinn and then Quinn would go to Kingsbury, if that makes sense.
Jay, what'd you make of yesterday's game? Just a little bit of a slop fest for everybody, and Washington, I guess, was less losery in that game. What'd you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of games like that yesterday. It was a hard watch for, you know, about 14 of the games on Sunday and Saturday. So that's typical of the 17th game of the season when nobody's really 18th, whatever it is, where nobody's playing for anything. You're just trying to get some guys some looks. You're still trying to win and compete. But it's not going to be pretty because there's a lot of backups playing.
Did you guys ever strategically sit anybody either for a full game or for parts of a game at the end of a year and play young kids to both get them experience, but also maybe to ensure that you had a better chance to not lose draft positioning?
Yeah, I think you try to get them in the game, maybe not start them, but try to get them in the game more and try to get their reps in there, try to get them, you know, half a game or three quarters of a game to see what they have, see what they can do. You know, guys maybe been on the practice squad all year, you elevate them for the last game or two and see what they have for next year, because there's going to be some important decisions when it comes to re-signing these guys and signing free agents at certain positions. I mean, do we need to go out and get another running back? Do we need to get another receiver? And you just got to look at everybody on your roster, and there's no better way to do that than play them in a game.
The one that's crazy to me is Hartman. And we talked about it a few weeks ago. It was kind of a big buzz topic around here back before Christmas, and then they went with Josh Johnson, and it just kind of went away. And I think it's mostly because people were, you know, out of the office, out of sight, out of mind, whatever. But it is crazy to me in Week 18 that a 39-year-old journeyman who your brother had in Tampa, you know, almost 20 years ago or whatever, he was on the field for four quarters, and they couldn't get a single snap, having been eliminated from the playoffs for 6 weeks, for Sam Hartman in that game when the Eagles are playing twos and threes like it's the preseason. I just don't get that. It seems insane.
Yeah, I don't understand that one either. I love Josh to death. I had him twice, once at Cincinnati, obviously once here. And he's a great competitor and a good guy to have on your roster. But, you know, Week 18, for God's sakes, your 17th game, I think you should look at your, you know, scout team quarterback who's been there all year. You know, he played in the preseason, did a few decent things, but what a great opportunity to go to Philadelphia and see how this guy stands up to a live pass rush. And maybe he plays better than he's looked in scout team, you know, who knows. But that is a head-scratcher. I agree with you on that one.
Jay Gruden with us here on G&D. So, Jay, a word that coaches love and then fans love to kind of throw around as well is accountability. And I understand, just a quick caveat, this isn't college football where if a guy's not going to class or not doing his job on the field, there's another five-star a year behind him kind of waiting in the wings, right? This is the NFL, rosters are limited, et cetera. But my frustration, the biggest one I have, is for a group that coming in this weekend was 4-12. Like, where was my benching? Where was somebody, you know, losing a little bit of playing time to someone waiting in the wings? I understand you're trying to build a culture, but what better way to demonstrate accountability than maybe saying, just kind of to your point here, we'll give somebody else a couple of these reps because you're not getting the job done. It sort of felt like they were very complacent in that regard. Your thoughts?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, being a 4-12 football team, there's got a lot of issues. People aren't playing that well consistently, and that's why you're 4-12. So surely there are guys on your roster, some backups that deserve a few looks in these situations on the road against Philadelphia. Like I mentioned, it's a great opportunity to see how these guys perform under the lights. And if the guys and the starters who are playing aren't cutting it, then you have to look at somebody else. And I agree with you guys 100%. That's a, you know, that's something maybe Adam Peters is upset about, that maybe they didn't play the guys that they asked them to play. Maybe it's an offensive lineman, a tight end, you know, another receiver down the line or what have you. So, yeah, I mean, it's a missed opportunity for those guys to look at some of the younger players who have been there all year long, busting their ass and trying to get a rep, and trying to get a game in, and they didn't do it.
Jay Gruden on Grant and Danny. On Cliff Kingsbury 2 years in, last year obviously was the bell of the ball. They were top five offensively. Daniels had this historic MVP caliber season. They get to the NFC title game. This year, with all the injuries, and they had more man games missed in terms of day one starters on offense than anybody else in the NFL did, and they still finished just outside of the top 10 in offense with second and third string quarterbacks for the majority of the year. I actually think in a lot of ways that's a W, not an L for Kingsbury. What do you think about him overall and the job he did this year?
Yeah, I think he did good battling the circumstances, and that's what you have to do as an offensive coordinator sometimes. It's not going to be perfect. You're not going to have the perfect weather. You're not going to have your starters in every game, and you have to make sure you deal with what you have. And I think he did a pretty good job of that. I think Mariota had some really good games, did some really good things. Obviously, Josh got a win yesterday, and so he was able to overcome some of the mistakes or some of the injuries and some of the circumstances that he was dealt with. You know, they weren't, you know, awesome at it. I mean, they were competitive at least. I think defensively is where they kind of missed the mark a little bit. But I think Cliff did a fine job. I mean, being top 15 or 12 with that offensive skill group that was playing without, you know, your number one pick and without Terry and Debo a couple times and Zach Ertz towards the end of the year. That's tough duty.
Jay, what do they need? When you start going shopping, looking at this roster to get back, not necessarily to the NFC title game and being 12-5, but getting back to, you know, more level, more just, you know, not a disaster for next year as they're trying to build something. What do they need?
They need a lot. I think they have to get their priorities straight, and they have to make sure they understand that these are our priority. We got to get a pass rusher somewhere. We got to fix our pass rush. We got to fix our defensive line. We got to fix our linebacking core. We got to fix our secondary. They got to make sure they really address the defense in a major, major way. Offensively, it'd be great to get Jaden another weapon somewhere, somehow. I think tight end has got to be a top priority for him, a guy who can do things in the running game and also in the passing game. Easier said than done. I understand that. And then I'd like to see a game-changing running back, man. It'd be awesome to get a guy that you can hand the ball to, have Jade with his own reads, and then all of a sudden this guy busting it through for 30, 40 yards. It's a big playability, guy on offense, whether it's a receiver or running back, I think would be huge.
If they stick and pick at 7, would you go edge there if the right guy falls to them? Or, you know, if they were to stay there, would you look at a different position?
I think you got to go most dominant defensive player available, unless it's a superstar type running back or wide receiver that just fell to you in your lap that can change the game and put points on the board. I think you got to look for a guy who scores points for you on offense and a guy who takes them away on defense. But right now, if it was close between a defensive player and an offensive player, I'd have to go defense with what they're dealing with right now. The good thing is free agency is before the draft typically, so you'll be able to address some of these positions in free agency, hopefully.
Who are some of the young guys that you like? I mean, to me, we're down on pretty much everybody. Understandable, as you said, it's now, I guess, a 5-12 season with a pretty empty win yesterday, but my big issue is there's not a ton of, hey, look at the upside on this guy as you start going down the list. It's Jaden Daniels, and we saw a couple good things from Sam Ristill at times, but you know, where are the young guys that we're really excited about? I think that's kind of my big issue, but are there some young players you go, I'd like to see more of him because you're into it?
Yeah, not really. That's the issue, too. I think when Noah Brown got hurt and Terry McLaurin was out, the no receivers really stepped up. That's a big problem. So I'm really worried about the depth at the wide receiver position. You know, obviously, Bill had a good year running the football in certain circumstances. He did a pretty good job. Him and Rodriguez are a decent 1-2 punch. You know, I'd still like to see more from those guys. Disappointed in Vince Knott, his inability to get in the lineup and play. That's a big issue. I think the right tackle, Connerly, did some decent things, but he's got a long way to go in his development. So offensively, yeah, they have a lot of work to do to get some more depth in that building. And then defensively, the cupboard's dry as far as young players. You mentioned Sanistrill, but I think other than that, that's pretty much it.
Let's talk Kliff's scheme for a second, if you don't mind. Going no huddle as much as they do, there is no other team that does it. Why not? I mean, is it an asset to do it to the extent that they do, or do they overdo it?
You know, I think it is an asset at times. I think there's a good mix, a good balance to have a little bit of both. You know, I never liked going no huddle all the time, but I didn't like doing it none of the time either. I think that's it's a good balance to have. You know, keeps defenses off balance. It eliminates a lot of the substitution things that they can do. And you force the tempo, which is good. But I think huddling up sometimes and changing personnel and doing some things under center, I think, is also a big plus. When you have a big offensive line, I think you can push them around a little bit, get in the huddle and wear them down a little bit, and then hit the play actions off of it. So I think there's a plus to both of them. I would never want to be in no huddle all the time just because I'd run out of code words. You know, people start listening to the words, and they know what's coming. Hey, Wanda, that's weak side inside zone. That's coming right here. So I don't know how Kliff does. He does a great job of changing up his no huddle words and calls, but I would definitely do a little bit of both.
Like, what's a reasonable percentage of the time? Here's why I ask. They run no huddle 64% of the time this year. The number two team in the league is the Saints at 22%. So you're talking about almost three times as much as any other team. And if you go back historically, Kliff's teams were number one in Arizona from 29 to 23. And then in Washington, each of the last 2 years, they've been number one. Now, it was obviously not much of an issue last year, but it didn't work this year.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between no huddle and 2 minute. The Saints are probably in a little bit more 2 minute because they're behind so many times throughout the year. So, but yeah, I mean, it's just a preference for the coordinator. Some coordinators like to go no huddle. Some people don't. I think it's very difficult to put in a lot of new plays when you're going no huddle. That's the issue I have with it. If you want to add a new play for a defense this week, and it's hard to come up with a new word and everybody's got to learn it with on the fly and get the right formation from spots and move people around with motions and all that stuff. I think that's a negative of going no huddle. You can't do a lot of that stuff. You're lining up and calling a play and running it. as opposed to lining up and shifting and motioning guys and try to change passing strength and try to let the defense or see what the defense is doing pre-snap. I think you lose that with no huddle, but some people like it. Cliff obviously does.
They tried a trick play yesterday, if you recall, that flea flicker, which just, you know, self-sabotage there on a bad toss back from Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. But that's something that people were asking kind of throughout the year. Just want to get your thoughts on it. I always feel like it's art more than it is science as to when to call one. You got to have the right feel for it, et cetera. But it's like when you don't have much going on, is that the time to pull out the trick play, or is it when you're humming a little bit and maybe somebody starts to sit on something? Like, what's your thought process on when to call the trick play and the look you're going for, et cetera?
Yeah, I think when you're humming along, you're humming along. You don't really need a trick play. You feel good about calling the plays that you got. Sometimes if you're stagnant, you need a lift, you need a big spark, big play somehow. I think that's when you pull it out. You know, if you go three and out your first two series, hey, let's try to get something going, hit this trick play or something like that, you know, so. There is a feel for it. You know, Ben Johnson's probably the best at it. He calls them probably more than anybody. There was a disaster trick play the other day in the game. The guy fumbled the thing at the 20-yard line going in for Carolina. That was a disaster. So sometimes the cons outweigh the pros on a trick play. You know, like, God dang, we're running the ball pretty good. Now we try a trick play and we fumble the damn thing. So, yeah, there's an art to it. You just got to make sure you practice it. You're good at it. The guys are confident.
Jay, going back to another extreme Cliff, percentage this year, shotgun usage for them was about 89%, and they under center, they were only under center 11% of the time, which was dead last in the NFL. Although, you know, they did get under center more from the last month of the season than they were before. So maybe, and I've kind of speculated behind the scenes, that's something they've been asking him to do more of. But going back to what we were talking about schematically, why is it that it seems like the best offenses, the Shanahan offenses, or a lot of what you did, the right now, like Kubiak in Seattle, Ben Johnson, it's under center, play action, pop shots, using the middle of the field, not much the drop back game from gun.
Well, that's another coach's preference. I prefer to be under center quite a bit because I think you limit the defense and what they can do a lot of times, and there's more things you can do with the play actions and the boots and the keepers. There's a lot of really good plays you can do under center, and you're limited in shotgun to your play actions and your boots. They're just not as good. And then some of the downhill running style with the back 7 yards off, open crossover, roll pound, roll the, you know, get to the line of scrimmage, one cut and go. You lose some of that with the backs, you know. So I think every team should have, you know, at least 45 or 50% under center if they can, if the game dictates it. You know, if they're in the lead or tied or close under center, I think 45, 50% of the time is good. Now, there's some benefits of being a gun. You get the quarterback away from center. The protections are a little bit easier. The ball comes out a little bit quicker, maybe. I think that's the one thing that they're lacking is under center plays.
Jay, I want to go around the league with you a little bit here. That Seattle-San Francisco game feels like a month ago, just with how the sort of start of the new year calendar is going. But they missed a million opportunities on offense and still throttled that Kyle Shanahan offense with most of their pieces raring to go. That was really impressive defensively for Seattle.
Yeah, they're one of the top defenses in the league, and they showed it. And obviously not having Trent Williams really hurt them a lot. I know people say it's just a left tackle. No, this is a major piece of your puzzle when you're running a football to the left and the cutoff's on the weak side. There's so many things, the pass protection that you're lacking when he's out of the game. So that had a major impact. But Seattle is humming right now, and I think Seattle and Houston could be the favorites because both defenses are playing so good.
The team the Texans take on in round one is going to be the Steelers. They survived the Ravens on a missed field goal at the horn last night. 26-24 doesn't really tell the story of that game. There were some fireworks late, final 8 minutes or so. The score was 17-13 before some defensive breakdowns by both teams. What'd you make of that back and forth to end the season?
It's typical of an AFC North game. Tough physical football, and then some big plays happen, and then all of a sudden it comes down to a field goal. Unfortunately, Justin Tucker wasn't their kicker. You know, it's just too bad because he's the guy that was a closer for so many years. And that position is very, very important this time of year and come playoff time because the games are going to be close. It's going to come down to a kick in the wind, in the cold, in the rain. And you got to have a kicker with ice water in his veins. And unfortunately, Baltimore fell short because they didn't have one.
Jay, I kind of discounted the Jaguars when they lost 3 or 4 in the middle of the season. You know, I kind of was, okay, this is who they really are after that amazing start with all the turnovers and the like. But you kind of look up and, what have they won? 9 in a row at this point or close to it? I mean, they all of a sudden look really, really good. I know they beat the Titans who have already packed it in, but some really impressive wins, including at Denver on the road down the stretch. How legit are the Jaguars?
just a good football team. And Liam Cohen has done a really good job with Trevor, and Trevor's playing with great confidence. The one thing Trevor was lacking with Coach Peterson and his early career was his overall confidence. You know, he'd play good for spurts, but not for very long amounts of times. And now he's playing good for four quarters. And the Jaguars are dangerous because they can run the football. When you run the football, they get the bootlegs going. They get Trevor some very comfortable and easy throws, and he's hitting the easy ones. In years past, he'd missed the slam dunks. Now he's hitting them, and they're getting big plays, and they really stop the run very well on defense. Their corners are opportunistic. Their safeties make plays. So Jaguars are dangerous, man. There's no doubt about it.
Jay, of the guys that have been fired today, so Raheem Morris by the Falcons, Kevin Stefanski of the Browns, Pete Carroll with the Raiders, and then Jonathan Gannon of the Cardinals, any of those surprise you at all?
Not really at all, because, you know, Gannon's been there a few years, had a couple opportunities, and had to try to fix Kyler Murray. That didn't work out, and they're terrible. And then Raheem kind of surprised me a little bit because they played pretty decent down the stretch, and they had some quarterback issues as well, with Penix going down and going back to Kirk. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me. Pete Carroll, that was just an absolute train wreck of a situation out there. They were horrible, non-competitive, so they had to do that. Nothing. Stefanski, the quarterback issues with Deshaun Watson, and obviously Shador. And it's not a good situation over there. They had a ton of injuries as well. The defense played really well. I don't know if they're gonna, you know, hire Jim Schwartz as their head coach or try to keep him, but their defense was outstanding throughout the year. So none of them are really surprising. It wouldn't surprise me if anybody gets fired. Really, that just the owners nowadays are very impatient. They're all looking for the next Sean McVay or whoever it might be. And good luck.
Jay, I can run through the matchups if you don't have them in front of you, but what's your favorite wild card game as you're going to look at it this coming weekend?
I'm interested in Jaguars and Bills. I think that's going to be awesome. Josh Allen coming to Jacksonville is going to be hopping there, and Jack, I know the people there because I'm down here. They're fired up for this one, and to watch Josh Allen against Trevor is going to be a fun one to watch.
Jay, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you as always. We will chat soon.
You got it. Thanks, fellas.
There's Jay See Gruden you, on Grant and Danny. He joined us every single Monday after games all season long.
On air and on the road, Jay Gruden is driven by the Tebbutt Automotive Group, Tebbutt Ford and Chantilly in Fairfax, your F-150 headquarters, Tebbutt Lincoln and Chantilly, and Tebbutt Chevrolet in Sterling, all home to Tebbutt for Life, lifetime vehicle coverage. See and shop them all at Tebbutt.com.
When you think about meal kit companies, what do you see? Probably long, complicated recipes and subscriptions you can't escape. But with the new Blue Apron, we're doing meal delivery differently. No subscription needed. Faster, easier meals. And the same dedication to quality we've always had. Shop 100 plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. One thing I've learned is that you buy a house, but you make it a home. And for decades, Angie's helped millions of homeowners hire skilled pros for the projects that matter. Get all your jobs done well at Angie.com.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Mike McDaniel was fired by the Dolphins today. He was most people's dream candidate for Washington, dating back 4 to 6 weeks ago when it started to look like he could be out of a job. Because he wasn't fired initially, and because reports over the last few weeks were they were going to stick with him. It looked like they were, by the way, Danny. They fired their GM.
I thought this was over. That they moved to the next thing where he's the coach and we're going about our business.
Chris Greer, the GM there for years, got ousted several weeks ago. So it felt like, okay, well, they chose to get rid of the GM, not the coach. And then they benched Tua Tagovailoa. And so by doing that, you felt like, well, they chose him over Tua. Then, to kick off the offseason, they put together this list of GM candidates, which included a few of the guys he worked with in San Francisco. So there were just a lot of the tea leaves making you think they're sticking with him. Supposedly he met with the owner on Tuesday, Stephen Ross, and that meeting didn't go very well. The reason I think that meeting didn't go very well is that John Harbaugh has subsequently become available. Because you know who wasn't originally on the GM list of interviewees for Miami that is now? One of the guys from the Chargers who's working with Jim Harbaugh.
With Jim.
And Joe Ortiz, the former Ravens executive, who has worked with John Harbaugh in the past. Mm-hmm. They added him after the Harbaugh firing. So all you got to do is connect some dots to say they're in the Harbaugh sweepstakes. That said, McDaniel as a candidate for Washington, what's your initial reaction to Commander's job being open and him being available?
This is why you have a private jet. You should already be in the air. Get down there right now. Bring whoever you have to bring. Bring a suitcase full of money. Say, this is just a taste. Whatever you have to do.
This is just a tape.
Stop everything. Stop your dumb meeting.
This
I don't care.
This is an action movie with like a drug deal gone.
Seriously.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care who you were supposed to be meeting with. You bring whoever you think the most charming guy in the ownership group is. Bring me Iron. Bring Rails.
That's Mitch Rails.
Give me Josh Harris to sit in the background and agree. Smoking a stogie like in the shadows. Give me Dan Quinn. Give me Peters. Fuel up that jet and get your ass down there and do not let him say no. If you have to hogtie him, if you have to put him on the plane like Bane at the start of The Dark Knight Rises, bring him back to Washington, D.C. That's your offensive coordinator. Take nothing else. Do not let him leave the room under duress. Sign that contract in your own blood. Hurry up.
Would you like to put Jaden Daniels under center?
Like now. I couldn't believe it. And if he goes to be an OC somewhere else, I'll be devastated. I will be so heartbroken. Now, if he goes to be a head coach somewhere else, what can I do?
So that's your first fly in the ointment.
Yep.
I'm not convinced he will be a head coach in this cycle, but I think he'll have the opportunity to be.
He will be again at some point.
Oh, 1,000%. Right? I think I would bet my life on that. He will get a second head coaching job. I actually think he could get an offer in this cycle, honestly. But here's what I don't know. And you just never know this with some of these guys. Like, Cliff Kingsbury could have been a head coach at the end of last season. I still believe the reporting I did, what I heard, was that the Saints' job's his if he wants
it. New Orleans,
That eventually Kellen Moore got, right? Kingsbury has not really been antsy or interested, necessarily, because he hasn't had to be. He wanted to go to Bali. Then he wanted to do the thing in college. Then he wanted to take his shot with Jaden Daniels. He's been in no rush. And part of the reason why is you're collecting head coach money. Not to be a head coach. He's still making money from Arizona as we talk this second into this football season. In fact, when Cliff Kingsbury gets a job, he'll be being paid by the Cardinals, the Commanders, and his new team. He'll be triple dipping. Pretty damn good gig if you can get it. Does Mike McDaniel want to get right back into the immensely stressful insanity of being an NFL head coach when you have the head coaching money coming in from Miami? And you can be a coordinator hanging out with your buddies and deal with less of the stuff that's not as fun. He might just be a guy who wants to do the play calling, offensive savant, drawn on a whiteboard.
Yeah, you find your unicorn, right? He doesn't want to be a head coach. which we kind of thought we had with Cliff, for at least for a time.
Or like the Cliff style of, you know, eventually we'll coach again because the money's too good and there's only 32 of those jobs and everyone's got a bit of an ego and wants to win. But maybe you don't have to jump back into it right away. So that is possibly how he's thinking. We don't know, though. He might also have just loved being a head coach. That's what he wants to do. So I think my number one, everyone slow down, this is not a foregone conclusion, would be, what if Mike McDaniel gets a head coaching job? Because he's definitely going to be asked to interview in this cycle. A quarter of the league has openings. And who is the offensive play caller that everybody wants right now? Other than Clint Kubiak, there isn't one. Stefanski, who's coming with some baggage. Those are the two offensive minds in this cycle. So I think McDaniel skyrockets up that list. The other fly in the ointment, if you want to talk OC stuff, non-getting a head coach division. And I don't know the answer to this. Is the Washington job the best? I think it probably is because of Jaden Daniels. But I'll give you an example. If he were to go to Detroit to call plays for the Lions, you get to be the play caller.
Yep.
You have an established Pro Bowl caliber top 10 quarterback in Jared Goff. You have a much better offense in terms of talent.
Oh, that toolkit is pretty good.
You've got Jahmyr Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown and a healthy Sam Laporta coming back. They've got to rework their offensive line. But you know you go there and you could have a damn good season. There's just a lot less questions.
Yep.
You don't have a young quarterback doing this traditional NFL offense thing for the first time. It's not Terry McLaurin and the Island of Misfit Toys. That might, you can convince me that that is as good a job. You don't know Dan Campbell. You know and love Dan Quinn. So that should balance things out. Daniels could be the tiebreaker, whatever. The other one is Robert Saleh. Saleh's getting several head coaching interviews this year. Saleh and McDaniel are Jenny and Forrest. Peas and carrots. Yes, he loves Dan Quinn. Does he love Robert Saleh more? You know what I mean? Like, who's his BFF totes? I don't know the answer to that.
I don't either.
And if you go somewhere with Saleh, you're kicking off a new regime. There is no get off to a slow start.
You're not inheriting that much, yeah.
He might not get fired at 0-4 like Dan Quinn might. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So I don't know where they fit in the OC category unless you just look at Jaden Daniels and go, nothing else matters.
Yeah, that's what I care about.
I get to work with that guy.
And an overhaul that's coming, right? Part of the sales pitch is going to be, hey, we're not just going to be Terry McLaurin and Noah Brown's, you know, idea. We'll actually go get you some speed. We'll go get you this and that. We'll have a dynamic tight end. Maybe we go get Isaiah Likely in free agency to get you a tight end that can catch and move. You've got a running back. Do you like him? If not, we'll find you something else there. I mean, you basically tell them the shopping list as you want it, kind of like they did for Kingsbury, to be honest with you. Remember, Kingsbury's got outside influence, or outsized rather, in drafting Jaden Daniels. I know that the rest of the scouts, everyone else liked him too, but that was important. He's the one writing the note about Josh Connerly leaving it on Adam Peters' desk. I would give McDaniel the same treatment and then some. What do you like? What do you want? I want him doing the thing that he did in Miami when Devin Achane fell to them, and he's doing spin kicks. Let's do that. Yeah. Find me the guy that makes you do spin kicks, and we'll get it. We'll get him here for you. I mean, you have to woo him at this point because you're right. He will be as in demand as anybody to call plays. Maybe not as a head coach right now. There's a little bit of a stink, I think, because people may be nervous about podium stuff, whether that matters or not.
Weird, quirky personality from a head coaching standpoint.
Yeah, people may not be that excited to jump back into that without more recent track record of success because they did kind of tail off and you know, when he was the darling of the league a couple of years ago, where they're jumping up and beating people and the offense is awesome and every other pass is a deep shot to Tyreek Hill, you know, on a deep cross, and they're just jogging into the end zone for 37 points a game and running Achane around the outside and someone else on the other side, each going for 1,000 yards or close to it. You couldn't. I mean, that guy was Prince of Zamunda getting flowers thrown at his feet. Now that maybe it's cooled a little bit in terms of a head coach, but in terms of a play caller, he gets to write his own script at this point.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, the Odyssey app. You can watch us on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube channel. By the way, new high definition, gorgeous cameras being debuted today at the radio.
It's a big
station.
Day for your boys.
Thanks to whoever made that possible. We look like we're in the big leagues.
Yeah,
here
look at that
on television. We've joined the major leagues.
Not just like that thing that you see on Twitter sometimes where it's like two guys in different locations with their computer cameras like right up their nose. Right. Like one guy's nodding a lot with the other guy's talking. I always want to look better than that. And I feel like we do today.
Grainy.
Oh, dark. Thanks, audience.
I don't know why the audience found that so funny.
Well, audience liked it. That was a good thing.
Danny,
Yep.
Are you buying what I'm saying on Mike McDaniel possibly getting a head coaching job?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Of course, yeah.
Are you buying what I'm selling that there is a possibility the Commanders are not actually the best OC job? It might be the best fit because he's close with Dan Quinn and he wants to work with him. Maybe he loves DQ. But in terms of openings, is there a case to be made, Detroit, or rolling with Solid or new
or gig? Baltimore, if there's more change and turnover, people might like that.
That's interesting. I wonder, like, if...
If Monken eventually is gone?
If, well,
you'd assume
he
would
be if there's a new head coach.
Right.
So if a new guy comes in there who's not offensive-minded to call plays, so that's, you know, you're not getting Kubiak who's interviewing there or Cliff or something. So let's just say...
Like if they bring Anthony Weaver back, who they loved.
Right. Or the guy that I just heard was interviewing, so we'll just use him, is Brian Flores.
There you go.
Flores is interviewing with the Ravens, and they hire Flores to be the head coach, and he says he wants McDaniel to call plays for Lamar. Probably a better spot to get a job next year.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not going like you want on the open market. 800-636-1067. Let's go to Joseph in Frederick on Grant and Danny. What do you make of McDaniel as a possible OC? It feels like it would be a home run for the Commanders.
Agreed. I just don't think that they're going to get him because I think he's going to go to Detroit. Just same thing. Washington's got Jaden. Detroit's got better toys at every other position in the offense. And that Detroit offense has shown that even with a Jared Goff, all those better toys and all these other positions, you can do a lot more things. And that's exactly, I think, what McDaniels wants to do. McDaniels then in Detroit gets to sit off in his corner and draw up plays and have a very front-facing guy named Dan to do all the front-facing stuff for him, which now, granted, he also has a front-facing guy named Dan in Washington, but he doesn't have as good toys.
The offensive options for him to play with, it's plug and play. This is Ronco, set it and forget it. It's Christmas morning. You don't need to take out a screwdriver and open anything up and put in batteries. You just unwrap it. You can start playing with the toy. I mean, he's licking his lips at the possibility of Jahmyr Gibbs and Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, it is, you're cooking with grease right off the bat.
There are a lot of people who could coordinate that offense and have it be really good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you got that as a baseline. You called the wrong play. Oops, I meant to say the other thing. That doesn't matter. Jahmyr Gibbs is still going for 30.
I don't think the fact that he was here and got fired by a different owner in a completely different organization matters at all. I've seen people bring that up, like, would he not want to come back? I don't believe that. I'm going to say that's a non-factor completely. That was the Redskins under Dan Snyder. This is a whole different world.
Also, it was before Franklin. I'm not to be flippant about it. He turned his life around.
True.
You know?
I mean, that didn't have anything to do with him being fired. It was just the whole staff got blown out when they fired Mike. But yes, I mean, he's a different guy now, too. And again, the relationship with Dan Quinn would be the draw. Dan Quinn's here now.
Mm-hmm.
He does have the same agent, Richmond Flowers, that Ben Johnson had when Johnson and the Commanders were doing the interview process and everything blew up very, very ugly. I don't believe Ben Johnson's still repped by Richmond Flowers. I think he's moved on since that fiasco. But McDaniel, very, very close with Flowers, who was on the offensive staff with Kyle and all those guys that I covered here in D.C. as a coach way back then. But he's his agent now. I don't think that would be a factor either, but I know that that was not a harmonious thing at all.
That's a good nugget.
Between Flowers and Ben and this front office and how all that went down. So I wonder, I don't think it would matter, but I wonder if there's anything to that. My guess is McDaniel's relationship with Quinn would supersede anything.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary, but the good news is if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you may qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. From roof repair to emergency plumbing and more, done well. So the next time you have a home project, leave it to the pros. Get started at Angie.com.
TikTok for Business is helping owners like you reach new customers every day.
We saw up to a 10x return on our TikTok shop ads. A few years ago, I started sharing my love for fashion on social media and Willow Boutique was born. We're not just a place to shop. We've really become a community. TikTok allows us to find more people to have that great experience. I cannot imagine my business without TikTok. It's completely changed my life and I could not be happier.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I cannot believe how different things are in Ashburn than they were a year ago.
Yeah, and the words of Al Michaels. Here we go.
You live long enough,
yeah.
You get right back to where you started.
Time is a flat circle.
It is wild just how familiar this all feels. But a calendar year ago, not even, Washington was about to play Tampa Bay in the playoffs. We were about to be treated to a rare and fun playoff win on the road, Raymond James Stadium. Then they went to Detroit, got the biggest win this franchise has experienced since January of 1992. And then it was on to the NFC Championship game. And really, since that week leading up to the NFC title game, where they would give up 55, get blown out by the Eagles, everything has come crashing back down to earth. But today, an ominous report from Jordan Schultz, formerly of Fox Sports, has bounced around different outlets. Jordan Schultz, super plugged in with agents, that's kind of his game. Sources, part of the issue the Commanders have had in the building is the front office meddling with the coaching staff on personnel and players to use, an ongoing problem dating back to 2024 when they were having success. With the team struggling this year, it reached new heights, and there were notable disagreements. Moreover, I have not gotten the impression Dan Quinn wanted to move on from his coordinators. The entire disconnect is one to watch as we head into 2026. And then Jordan Schultz quotes a source who said, there's a lot of S going on there, end quote. We back up.
Yeah, let the world know.
We are back, baby. The Commanders, the Redskins, what's different? Let's just start with this report.
Yes.
What do you think?
I wonder what else Cliff Kingsbury's agent had to say. I'm sort of being tongue-in-cheek sarcastic, but this is clearly... We have done this before. We skip to the end here in this marketplace. We know. You don't have to start, you don't have to be Columbo. You don't have to be Ace Ventura pet detective to get to the bottom of this one. When things go bad and people start losing gigs, blame starts flying and people start doing a little CYA. And you do the CYA to try to make sure that your next job or your next interview can go okay when you need people to know that, no, I know it was bad, but it wasn't my fault. Here's why. So you use what mechanisms you have. You flush some things down. And you hope they come out on the other side of the pipes to make people, be more on your side, to get your narrative and get your story out there. You don't need to do that when you're 12-5 and it's a honeymoon. You do when you're 4-12 and you win a meaningless game to end the season. So I buy it 100%. I buy that there's trouble in paradise. I buy that discord should have happened, quite frankly. And you know, the idea that it erupted and spilled over and was a point of contention, yeah, I understand that. Now, I'm not condoning it. I don't think the GM should be walking down and sticking a finger in someone's face and going, hey, on 2nd and 7, make sure that you throw a screen pass to Ben Sinnott. Or where's Jalen Lane on my pop pass? That shouldn't be happening. That's not what you do. You pick the ingredients. You manage the edges as the general manager. But game day, you know, the plan they're in, that belongs to the coach. That's an overstepping, if that is to be believed. And I think to some degree, it probably is. But you're telling me the bad team had discord? Yeah, I buy it.
Second time this week from a second different reporter and outlet where we've heard about consternation between the front office and the staff. So there's more smoke here to that. I think it is clear and it is unequivocal that you can, while not dismissing this, you can understand where it's coming from. You joked about Kingsbury's agent, Eric Burkhart, or one of the other agents that are involved here. Could be the agent for Joe Barry. Joe Barry's not the guy. Joe Witt.
Yeah, him too.
That's another bad defensive coordinator they fired. I've done this for too long.
Yeah.
Could be the agent.
For Greg Minuski.
Exactly. For, you know, Greg Blosch. No, but it could be Joe Witt's agent. It could be Bobby Johnson's agent. It could be, you know, somebody else in the building who we don't know about that is on their way out, that was a part of one of these staffs that now knows that their days are numbered and their agent's getting the word out. But that side of the story being disseminated, while I think it's pretty easy to chalk up where it's coming from, does not mean it's wrong. That's an important distinction. In other words, when a couple gets a divorce and you go to the wife who's getting separated and you say, tell me about this guy, the soon-to-be ex-husband, and she unloads the magazine, mm-hmm. right? She's just unloading the clip. He's lazy. He doesn't do this. He doesn't do that. He's a bad husband. He's a bad dad, whatever. Like, she's angry. This is coming from a place of emotion. She has been wronged. She feels a little bit miffed and is angry at this person. And so she's saying all of the worst possible things. But there's probably a lot of truth in it, too. You're probably still able to weed through some of that, some of the biases, and say, was this true that they weren't working that hard? Is this true that they cheated on you? Whatever it was, right? So there could be merit to some of this. That's what we have to figure out. That's what the Commanders have to figure out. That's what this ownership group has to figure out. Here is the part of this, though, that I do not buy for 1 second. This is not to knock Jordan Schultz's reporting. I think he heard something, and he's passing that along. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what reporting is. Generally, you know, you hear from one person, you better corroborate it with another. There's some checks and balances here. But in 2026, the year of our Lord, the way reporting works is essentially people hear something from somebody and then they disseminate it and put that out there, right? And what I'm quite sure he was told by someone was that Dan Quinn didn't want to make these decisions. I don't believe that for 1 second. I don't think that Adam Peters said to Dan Quinn, you have to fire Cliff Kingsbury, and then Quinn fired a guy that he didn't think he should. I don't think that Dan Quinn, who already made Joe Witt come down to the sideline from the booth, who already took his play calling duties away, who has already cut him off at the knees midway through the season, was unwilling to fire Joe Witt. I don't believe that for 1 second. So this second part here, I have not gotten the impression Dan Quinn wanted to move on from his coordinators. I do not believe that even a little bit.
Fair. Here's my counter to your counter. I think you say it that way to make sure everyone knows that it wasn't just Cliff's representative talking about it. In other words, if this anonymous source goes, he really didn't want to fire Cliff Kingsbury, everyone's kind of going, dude, you can just sign your name. It's not anonymous anymore. You say he didn't want to move on from his coordinators. I think to throw some the attempt at some subterfuge there, that this could have been anybody. But to me, that's how I viewed that. So it's interesting that you came to that conclusion, because I'm with you. I don't think you had any hesitation. You understood. The assignment was pretty easy. Once you said, Joe Witt, you ain't calling plays anymore, what do you do here?
So you're right? Saying you just label it as everyone so that you protect your source?
Yes.
But my point is, okay, so let's just make it Cliff then, who's really the person we're talking about. The idea that Dan wanted to keep Cliff, that Dan was happy with how Cliff was operating, goes against a lot of the things that I've heard within the last few days when they're having these meetings, and they weren't just in the last 72 hours, but the, you know, it is very normal for a defensive-minded head coach dinosaur mm-hmm. to want to run the ball more.
Yeah.
Run it 10 times, they want you to run it 12. It is very normal when you get shut out by the Vikings that they're upset with your protection plan. Like, I think there was some strife and some consternation. again, we'll see. And maybe there's no way to ever prove this or not. But both with the information that I've gleaned and then just my eyes watching from the same seats you were in Minnesota and the season sitting at this table here with you, I do not believe that Adam Peters demanded that Dan Quinn fire Cliff Kingsbury, and Quinn begrudgingly did so, where he walks into the office and goes, hey, Cliff, look, if this was up to me, buddy, you and I would keep making sweet music together. But the big bad boss is making me do this. I just don't believe that.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out how I would quantify this. I'm going Rossini report about Peters Kingsbury discord.
Yes.
The information that you've been able to glean and pass on. And then this source that I believe, and again, I'm not calling anybody out, just my belief that this is basically coming from Kingsbury's
this
camp.
This idea of like meddling GM coordinators at odds. Yeah. I believe there's truth to some of this.
Yeah. And so was Dan Quinn a 1 out of 10? 10 out of 10 going, get out of my office. I never want to see your ass again. You'll never work anywhere. He was not a 10 out of 10. They wanted the fire Cliff. Was he a 1, though, where it's like, God, I want to keep you so bad, I just can't? I don't think it was that. I think it's on the scale, right? I think it's somewhere towards the middle.
Well, here's the way to ask it.
Yeah.
What percentage of Cliff's departure, if we're divvying up 100% to Peters and to Quinn, would you say, like, is on whose desk?
Yeah.
So, in other words, just to give you my first numbers, and I haven't thought about this. I'm thinking about it.
Because that's what I'm trying to quantify.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, like, 60-40. Dan Quinn, or 65-35 Dan Quinn. I don't think Adam Peters, when you go to him, I don't think you have to sell him and be like, dude, listen. Because I think a lot of how Quinn views the world is what he knows Peters wants anyway. I think that is Peters' guy, and they are in lockstep on a lot of things. Like, you and I do a show together. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, we celebrated our 12th anniversary.
So it's 12 years, but we're in our 13th year, but it's our 12th anniversary. Yes.
12th anniversary.
Yeah.
By the way, if you have anything you'd like to send us for our 12th anniversary, please let us know. We'll get you our addresses. Right?
Yeah.
but you take aside.
Yeah.
You start stuff. You kind of start seeing things the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We've done the show long enough. I'll use an axiom that you came up with. You'll use a reference that I like. You just kind of mold.
Yeah, it's
together.
Like a zipper.
You start seeing things like each other see it. You know. I think that probably happens with them. So I think when Quinn goes to Peters and says, I want to get rid of this guy, it's not like it's news to Adam Peters or he's like, really, you do? I think they've had a lot of conversations. But the bottom line is, did Quinn want to make a change or not? I think the answer is yes. And so I'm going over 50%.
So I flipped the numbers. In other words, I don't think Dan Quinn fought on this one. Like, I don't think he's like, it's either me or him. I don't think he did anything like that. I think this is a Peters thing. I think Dan Quinn is, when it comes to these type things, is the Martin Mayhew. Remember Martin would stand up there at the press conferences and go, I agree with Coach. Stunning that you agree with Coach. You know what Coach said it. Did he? Ron hit that one? He knocked that one out of the park too? That answer was perfect? Way to go, Martin. Do you have any independent thoughts of your own on this matter? Yeah, what Coach said. I think that's why Dan Quinn got the gig, to be frank with you. I think Dan Quinn, yes, to a degree, sees things the way Adam Peters does, but he also knows that's in his professional interest to do so. I don't think they wanted a strong-willed head coach. I mean, to me, my prime example on this is not that they didn't end up hiring Mike Vrabel. They didn't interview Mike Vrabel because the reputation is this guy is
or Belichick.
Or Belichick. Yeah. They didn't want somebody that was going to, you know, a buck that was going to push back.
The Ben Johnson thing when he was interested in the job went completely sideways.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the really strong-willed people, and I know people get upset when we bring this up, but sorry, put your big boy pants on for a second. I mean, Dan Quinn flew in here coach and flew out coach when they're flying all over the country on a PJ to meet with all the other candidates to start that process. Like, yeah, they ended up with a guy, I think, that kind of saw the world the way they wanted him to. There's no doubt about that. Doesn't mean he can't be the right hire. Certainly was in year one.
And that's not necessarily on its face a criticism, by the way. I don't necessarily mind that one way or the other. I want the person that I'd rather have be the strong architect is the GM. I want this whole organization to be in his image. Like, that to me is the tone setter. Coaches come and go, assistants come and go, coordinators, everything underneath it, they'll change. The GM, that I want my Ozzie Newsome. I want to wake up and go, I'm safe. I'm sound. I got that guy.
That's another good point, by the way. How long have we wanted a real GM around here to call all the shots?
Beg for it.
To be the de facto leader. And I don't need it to be Belichickian my way or the highway, chest out, big time, like ego, no one else has a say. And that's certainly not the way they portray this when they're sitting side by side as this, you know, working relationship. But if you want a GM who is powerful, and the buck stops with them, who's more powerful than the coach, and who calls the shots and runs the show, you've got that.
Yes.
And if that means, by the way, that that GM is going to go occasionally to a coordinator and say, I drafted a tight end at 52 and you're not playing him because you're playing some other older guy that you have a relationship with from Arizona, I need you to get this kid the football, I don't have a huge problem with that. Now, is it overstepping? Is it abnormal that a GM would go to a coordinator and do that if that's what's happening? Apparently so. This was Jay Gruden, who we had on the show on Monday after this report broke, and we asked him, is it odd, is it normal for a general manager and a coordinator to basically be butting heads over either scheme or usage of players? Is that something that should be happening?
Well, that's odd to me because typically the GM and the offensive coordinator don't have contact at all. That's the head coach's job to talk to the GM directly and relay the coach's message to him directly, and the coaches don't have really any interaction with the GM. So it's odd to me. But, I guess if he's not getting the players he wanted, and maybe he's expressed his frustration in that way. But it's just a weird situation because, like I said, they don't really typically interact.
So that's the what's typical and how the normal structure would go. That's I understand that to a degree, but how serious are these things? In other words, is this a scheduled meeting on the books where Ben Sinnott usage, come by my office at 10:15, we'll have a 45-minute knockdown dragout? Is it in the hallway over a cup of coffee? Hey, Cliff, how's your weekend? Pretty good. Hey, man, why can't Ben get the ball? Is that the meddling? We don't know. I mean, there's layers to this, right? There's nuance to it. So when things don't go well, again, this is expected. I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying you'll find all the warts and all the negative things come flying out. But ultimately, the idea is that Adam Peters is the person that will hopefully, if this all works well, I think this offseason is pivotal for him, by the way. He's going to have to change complete direction in terms of player acquisition, personnel, the type of team he's going to field, et cetera. I know why they doubled down after the success of year one. I think that was supposed to be temporary. You go to the NFC title game, you have to kind of keep doing that. This blew up in their face. It's now get young, get fast time, and hurry up about it, please. Let's start yesterday. So that's where I'll be judging him. But for major matters, I think it's Peters' call, and I think Dan Quinn knows that. I think that was part of one of the conditions of his employment, where I appreciate your opinion. We'll do this by committee, but the buck stops right here, dude. I'm Adam Peters, and you're not.
Yeah, and I don't buy, while we're making a list of things that I'm not completely signing off on, like this idea that Quinn had to fire these coaches and didn't want to. Don't agree with that. Here's another thing I don't buy. When Adam Peters in the press conference on Monday at the end of year presser said something to the effect of, like, the staff is exclusively DQs.
Mm-hmm.
I basically am a spectator, and I just sit it out, and he lets me know what he's doing. They said at other points during the presser over and over again that everything's so collaborative, that nothing happens one without the other. So in every other way, Adam and Dan are in cahoots, and they are, talking things through. But in this one element, this significant, massive element, by the way, the guy that runs the building and runs the shop doesn't care to have a say in who the OC or the DC is going to be. By the way, the quarterback you drafted second overall, in some way, your reputation with that pick, at least initially, not forever, but for right now, is kind of on the line with that selection. That development of that player, Dan Quinn's future, who was your first head coaching hire, this is all on the line with this OC selection.
Yep.
And you're just going to wait in your office for Quinn to tell you who it is? Call me crazy. I don't buy that for one second. He's absolutely going to be heavily involved in picking the OC. Now, it's got to be Quinn's call in the end with some help from Peters, and I'm sure that was the case with the dismissal of these coaches as well. But the fact for me is, if you're sitting here reporting today that the GM's super powerful and meddling and overly involved and was annoying the coaches, number one, that's obviously coming from the coaches who just got fired,
yep,
which doesn't make it not true. Number two, we've got to figure out to what extent was that meddling happening. Is it as simple as him wanting to see Ben Sinnott more, which I did too and you did too?
Yeah.
So I kind of agree with that one. Like, what are we talking about?
And also, I know I'm harping on this detail, and I know maybe it's not relevant to some, but what does meddling look like?
Right.
Is it a conversation in passing? Is it ribbing when, like, you guys are there walking on the treadmill next to each other, sipping electrolyte-filled water, going, yeah, dude, play Ben Sinnott. No. And then we go about our day.
Get Brandon Coleman back in there at left guard, man. Every time you see him, and it just hasn't happened all year,
or
he's insubordinate.
Or is it, finger in the face, do what I'm telling you to do, or your ass is grass. I have no idea.
Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Let's get the party started here on Grant and Danny. Just after 3 o'clock, Trae Young traded to the Wizards. Bobby Marks of ESPN, one of our favorite hoops analysts, joins us now, former NBA front office exec. Bobby, Young to D.C. for C.J. McCollum and Corey Kispert. Your reaction to that deal last night was what?
Yeah, not surprised. I thought certainly when you started to see, you know, the tea leaves earlier in the week, and, you know, listen, it's no surprise that Atlanta and Trae were looking at trade scenarios. I think that was probably something that started this summer. You know, the market wasn't probably as great as they would have liked. The record is the record. When, you know, them playing better without him certainly probably plays into this and everything. And I think you look at it from Washington's perspective. I think it's more probably about next year and years after that than really the current, you know, situation right now. It's a team that's, you know, was projected to have a lot of money this summer here. If you figure that he's one of your main targets in the offseason, if he became a free agent, you know, might as well go out and try to get him now and not wait until July.
What does it do financially for them? Go into some of those machinations. I know that's not as exciting for a lot of basketball fans. They want to talk about balls going in the basket, et cetera. But I think there's some pretty good upside here for Washington.
Oh, I agree. I mean, when you look at, we could play the cap space game and say they could have $100 million if they didn't do the trade and they got all this money. But when you look at, you know, free agency wise, it's most of the free agents are probably over 30. Trey's 27, so he fits that timeline a little bit better here. But I think financially here, I think there's a couple ways to look at it. Trae has a player option for next year. It's $49 million. He is extension eligible, even with the trade right now. Basically, you would eliminate that player option, and you can extend him down. You can extend him up. You know, it doesn't mean that because he's making 49, it's going to come in at 49. So maybe it comes in at a little bit lower, and you got a compromise on the next deal. And I think at the worst case scenario, he opts in. You know, you're still probably looking at, you know, $40 to $50 million in cap space, and that includes your draft picks counting. So you still have a ton of flexibility. You still have most of these guys, on first round rookie contracts here. Nobody's up yet for an extension. I think the big question will be what happens with Chris at the deadline, who's with the second player on one of these big expiring contracts, as far as what they go out and do with him here. But yeah, I mean, you took an expiring CJ and turned him into a player that was under contract here. So it puts a little bit of a dent, but as I said, you're going to go out and spend that money anyway. And if Trae figures to be part of what you're trying to do, then it makes all the sense.
It sounds like, Bobby, you think there's a chance that he doesn't opt in for the $49 million next year.
Is that was out there. Yeah.
That's real.
Yeah. I think if there is an opportunity where you can work out a deal on a long-term contract at a lower number, I think that's an opportunity that both sides should certainly look at.
You're saying the Wizards and him or any team?
No, the Wizards and him.
Yeah.
I don't listen. If Trae Young became a free agent, it's hard to get back that $50 million in free agency from, you know, whether it be Brooklyn or Utah or Chicago or, I don't know, maybe one of the LA teams here. Like, that's, you know, the going rate is not $50 million for Trae Young in free agency here. So that's why I said, you know, can it come down lower? And then maybe it gives him some long-term security here. So I think that's certainly an option that that you would probably want to look at too.
So from a basketball perspective here, just kind of go into the fit. I mean, to me, the Wizards don't really have a traditional point guard, and this is one of the assist percentage leaders in NBA history, right behind John Stockton. How does it affect the development of guys that are already on the rise? That you mentioned, the Keshawn Georges, the Trae Johnsons, the Alex Sars, et cetera. Sure. Talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, here's a guy that on a bad night will give you 20 and 10. Certainly one of the better passing guards out there as far as setting his teammates up. I thought last year, there was stretches of games where he was really, really good. So I think he'll help. I mean, I think, as you said, when you have a player like that on the floor, and I think you saw it a little bit with certainly the last probably month here with CJ and some of the younger players here, when you're starting to win games and you have a guy that either can score or set up your teammates. The Orlando game the other night was probably, you know, example A as far as what can happen, what the good things can happen with this roster here. Then I do think it makes life a lot easier. Now, you have to have the right guys out there on the court defensively. I think that's certainly a priority. And we saw that, you know, with Atlanta, as far as, you know, from struggled in a little bit here. So, but I do think, I think we talk about his defense a lot, but as I said, you have a guy that, you know, can give you 10, 11 assists per night, and can try to help you win some games.
Bobby Marks of ESPN, Trae Young traded to the Wizards. You're listening to Grant and Danny here on The Fan. How do they go about shutting him down this season? And is that a lock? That pick's top 8 protected.
We need it, Bobby.
Way more about that pick than I do Trae Young.
We need it.
I know. It's going to be fascinating here because, that's going to be interesting. It's, you know, especially in a day and age where it feels like the league has their antennas up more as far as guys, shutting down. If the season ended right now, you would be in really good position, right? You're 10-26. It would be you would need in the four hole, potentially could move up. I think it's going to be interesting where the other teams are. You know, Dallas, it's funny. Dallas is at 9 at 14-23. So, you know, listen, you don't want to go on we all want to win games, but you don't want to go on a stretch of games where you're going to wind up handing that pick over, which is top 8. Protected here. So I do think, you know, he's got a quad contusion right now. We'll see where he is with that. I do think there's a part of you where you're trying to integrate him in. And even if you're playing him, I don't think you have to play 30 to 35 minutes because you're basically going to try to see how he fits in with this group.
In terms of, again, you mentioned a contract between the two. That hadn't occurred to me, and I probably should have. I sort of viewed this as an upside play for everybody, where everyone's getting something out of it, you know, kind of a marriage of convenience where Young might try to, you know, kind of kickstart his career again. You know, I think he's done some in terms of deposits, Bobby, to increase his rep. I mean, I know there was kind of this pulse about him out there that he maybe wasn't everybody's favorite teammate, that he was always kind of separate. It was like everyone's getting together and Trae Young was sort of separate from that. Now I think he's kind of done some, you know, some work in that regard. But going to that, maybe the history and maybe if it's not an extension, him kind of using this as a almost a second act launching point.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could look at it that way too, as far as whether it be this is kind of an audition, whether it be for the next 3 months, or if it's an audition for the next year and a half, as far as, you know, with that here, I think there's the familiarity where you have, you know, Travis Schlenk, who works in the Wizards front office, is the guy that drafted Trae in Atlanta. So I think you're looking at it from that perspective here, but I do think, getting him under your roof for I call it kind of pre-free agency here, where you get a guy under your roof for 3 months or 4 months and they, you know, you figure out, hey, this is what we want to do long-term, both sides. Then maybe we rip up that team option and our player option. And we look at doing something that makes sense for both sides.
Talking to a great NBA analyst. We love having him on with significant news breaks. Feels like about once a year or so. We're hitting up Bobby Marks about the Wizards.
Explain this to us.
And getting the details and the lowdown. Today, it's on the Trae Young trade. So the idea of an extension, I want to double-click on that Danny just mentioned. A, does that mean you do think there is a path to him being the long-term point guard here with Trae Johnson at the 2 and Alex Saar and whatever the next iteration is? And then B, what would that extension actually look like numbers-wise?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, the rules have changed where it helps both the team and the player. And in the past, if you had a player on a player option and you wanted to do an extension, you could only go off, you know, it couldn't be anything lower than that $49 million number for next year. You have the ultimate flexibility as far as basically rewriting as far as whatever number you want to put in there, anywhere from $15 to $35 million here. I think the trade just happened. You know, is it going to be short term, long term? I think it's probably, if you're asking me right now, I think this is probably more of, if it works out, it's probably going to be something long term. Now, the going rate, you know, with point guards out there, guys still in his prime here, you know, is he a max player? I think that gets thrown out a lot. What does your rest of your roster look like? Who's coming up for extensions? Who eventually do you have to pay? I think that's the beauty of, you know, that you have a lot of, as I said, a lot of guys on rookie contracts here. You got Corey's number just came off your books here. So is there a number that's, you know, is it 40 in that range? And I think, you know, a lot of it now is what's the percentage of the salary cap. As the salary cap goes, guys, you know, like a $50 million guy is like a $30 million guy, you know, like 10 years ago here. So I think that all has to be come into consideration here. And I don't think anybody's probably ready to jump in and get something done right away. But I do think that's a viable option for both sides to figure out.
Bobby, there was a time, it's not that long ago, as you mentioned, he's 27, where Trae Young was, I mean, lethal offensively. Unbelievable pick and roll player, among the best penetrators in the league, you know, whether it was to score himself with that floater or creating for teammates, the rim runner. Like, you could just envision the Clint Capella 2.0 just getting dunk after dunk, not being able to check him. Is he the same guy? I feel like he's maybe a step slower, still good, but maybe not that lethal superstar on offense anymore. Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think, listen, there was a time, I mean, we can go all the way back to, we can go back to that New York series when, you know, he put basically the fear of God in Madison Square Garden, right? I mean, as far as what he was able to do, and here's a guy that's, you know, averaged 25 points in the playoffs, almost 30 games. Is he the same player that he was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago? Probably not. And I think that happens with everyone, but I still think, you know, his numbers are a little bit down. I mean, he's shooting 31% from three this year. Can he get him? Can you get himself back up to that 37 number? But I do think he's still a really, really good player in this league. I think who else is around him is important. Mm. You know, I think it's a little bit unfair saying, well, he's the reason why Atlanta's defense suffered, because I've watched some of these Hawks games when he hasn't played, and they've given up 134 and 135 points without him on the floor. So I think that's a little bit of a scapegoat with that there. But I do think, as I said, it's a guy on a bad night, he's giving you 20 points.
Yeah, touch on that. That's what I was going to ask you about. The great Bobby Marks with us here on G&D. Defensively, I know a lot of stars that are great on offense, but don't play defense. I know Luka's not terribly interested in it, and teams will target him in the finals or whatever. But there's also a limit that a 165-pound undersized guard can have defensively. How big a deal is that? For me, it's worth it when my team is 27th in offensive rating. I'll take that trade-off, but go into him defensively.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big thing. I mean, he's a smaller guard. I mean, that's the reality of it here. And I think we're in probably a little bit of a different generation here with I'm not saying every team has a 6'7", 6'8", Luka Doncic-sized, you know, guard that Trey's going to cover here. But I said, you know, that's probably the one thing I would be a little concerned now. But I do, as I said, I think if you have you know, who's on your roster, you know, whether it be Bilal or Trey, guys that maybe can guard a little bit bigger guards here, I think that will help him a lot.
Bobby Marks, ESPN, the Wizards have traded for Trae Young. I made the case earlier, fact or fiction this, because you are way smarter than I am. I feel like the value of this player has subsided over the last few years because it's easier to score than ever. And so having this incredible scorer, albeit a point guard who can also get assists, like, I just feel like everybody can score. Am I off?
Well, you need guys that can score. I mean, this is a scoring league, and I know when we get to the playoffs, defenses basically will win you games here.
But like in a world where Denny Avdija is averaging 25, I guess my point is the gap between, like, a guy who can score a little bit and Trae Young is not as big as it was 6 years ago.
Yeah, no, that's right. I mean, that's a good point. But I do think, things have changed. I think how teams run their offense is a lot different. How, you know, some teams don't have a traditional point guard, and maybe you're playing through, whether it be Denny in Portland or some of these other players, you know, whether it be Michael Porter Jr. in Brooklyn, right, who's averaging 26 points but averaged 17 in Denver here, where your roles are different. You know, the roster is different. The style, as I said, the style of play is different here. But I think when you're on a team with Washington with a lot of young players here, you're probably going to ask a lot more from Trey as far as based on what, you know, different matchups and different nights bring to you.
Let's go into what his, you know, new teammates will, what it'll kind of look like here maybe in a year or two, Bobby. In terms of Sarr, my mouth is watering at the idea of him playing with a legit point guard that could set him up in that way.
Yep.
Where do you see Sarr now, and where could he go in a couple of years if this works?
You know, it's funny. I've said this a bunch of times, and it's when we look at players going from year one to year two, or year two to year three, the one thing we don't have is a camera in the gym in the off season as far as what they're doing. You know, so when you make the type of leap that Alex has and will continue to do so, and you have him, under contract for another 2 years, basically he's below the average player salary, which is pretty nice to have. I think he's only going to get better. I really like what I've seen in Trey Johnson so far. He is only going to get better. You know, you still have a group of, you know, whether it be Will Riley and Bilal, and, you know, we'll see how with Trey Young, with Bub, as far as how, what his role is going to be. You'll hopefully keep your first, and you got another first, at the end of the first round, which is OKC's. You've got a lot of flexibility. And as I said, you know, all you have to do is hit on a couple of these first round picks, and that sets you up a long way. I mean, look at Charlotte. I mean, Charlotte's not ready to compete for a top six, but they drafted Con Knipple, and he's one of the favorites for Rookie of the Year. And that is what gets you from winning 15, 16 games a year to a team that you can build a foundation, and then all of a sudden now you're in one of the top six teams in the Eastern Conference.
You just said hopefully they keep their first. There's no way they don't, right?
I mean,
just no way.
Like, that would be surprised.
That would be malpractice. Yeah. That's like a fireable thing, it feels like.
Yeah, that would be, I would be surprised as far as, and they're not the only one. Listen, the Utah's right there. Their pick goes to OKC if it falls out of the top eight here. I think
good.
Brooklyn probably
OKC
wants to keep
needs
their
some
pick.
Guys. So
yeah, they need
good.
Some help.
Well, and it's crazy. You know, OKC's got that Clipper pick too, which is unbelievable. So yeah, I think I do think there's a priority to a high priority to retain that first. And I think listen, they've got 26 losses. I think fourth most out of any team behind Indiana, New Orleans, and Sacramento.
Bobby, what would be the fine? Like game 82?
Game 82, final
possession, Wizards about to shoot for the win, Will Dawkins goes on the floor and tackles a guy, and the ball goes out of bounds. Like, what is the fine for Will Dawkins?
I don't know about that, but we saw the Mavericks 2-3 years ago basically rested Luka and Kyrie because their pick would have gone to New York if it fell, I think, out of the top 10. And they're actually competing for a playing spot too, so that was equally worse, and they got fined $750,000. So the fine will probably happen, and if you're in the Wizards and you're a Wizards fan, you could care less, as there'll probably be some long-term ramifications how they go about addressing the tanking rules here, which hopefully you don't have to worry about in the future.
And tell Ted, I'll buy a couple more pretzels at Cap One Arena.
GoFundMe/CamBoozer, please.
Exactly. Bobby, thank you, buddy. Appreciate you.
Okay, you got it. Take care.
Thanks, Excellent, Bobby. As always. Watch him on ESPN. Does such a good job breaking down the NBA.
Confronting high credit card debt can feel scary. But the good news is, if you owe $10,000 or more in credit card debt, financial relief options are now available. National Debt Relief is currently offering debt relief designed to reduce what you owe, fast-tracking your way to being debt-free. If you qualify for debt relief, you may be able to pay back significantly less than what you owe and save thousands of dollars. Imagine only paying one low monthly program payment you can afford and saving money as you become debt-free. National Debt Relief has already helped bring debt relief to over 550,000 U.S. consumers, earning thousands of five-star reviews and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. You're stronger than your credit card debt. Take the first step and visit nationaldebtrelief.com to see what debt relief you qualify for. That's nationaldebtrelief.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.